Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when drug users are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. Maya Solovitz is an award-winning author and journalist who covers addiction and neuroscience. Her latest book, the New York Times bestseller, Unbroken Brain, A Revolutionary New Way of Understanding Addiction, uses her own story of recovery from heroin and cocaine addiction to explore how reframing addiction as a learning disorder can transform prevention, treatment, and policy. It was first published by St. Martin's Books in April of 2016, and it is now being released in paperback. It is, and I have Maya on the phone with me right now. Maya, it is such a pleasure to be talking with you. How are you today?
I am good, and thanks so much for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Let me start first of all with just the title. Why Unbroken Brain?
Okay, there's two reasons. One is the official reason, and one is the more hidden reason. The official reason is that the brain of people with addiction is not actually broken. We have this idea that addiction causes brain damage and that it creates what is always a chronic, relapsing, progressive disorder. And that's actually not true in many cases. Progressive seems never to be true because the data shows that you are equally likely to stop using at any given time. So if it were progressive, it should be less and less likely that you would quit as you get older, but that does not turn out to be the case. Chronic, it certainly is for many people, but also many people do outgrow it without even attending a self-help group or any kind of formal treatment whatsoever. So it's complex and varied.
See, this is the, because people now have taken to understanding of addiction as a brain disease rather than being some kind of moral failing or a sign of evil.
I realize I just didn't finish that explanation there. So it is unbroken brain because what basically happens during addiction is you fall in love with a drug rather than a person. And so what that means is that you've learned something in a very deep and intense and difficult to unlearn kind of way, just like when you fall in love with somebody, you get all these cues about them, your stress system gets wired to them, you get all these cravings for them. It's the same system being co-opted. But falling in love does not break your brain, and neither does addiction, although certainly if you take certain drugs in certain combinations, at certain doses, it can do severe harm.
There are folks who have described love itself as a disease. So
right, which I think is it's very interesting because in the I guess it's the early 80s or late 70s, Stanton Peale wrote a book called Love and Addiction, and it was his idea to use the sort of metaphor of love because we didn't know about the neuroscience at that point. But it was his idea to use that, and he was hoping to depathologize addiction, but instead he wound up pathologizing love, and we got the whole codependence movement, which was not his happiest moment at all.
Oh,
and I just want to add, the secret reason that it's Unbroken Brain is because of the Grateful Dead song, Unbroken Chain.
One of the stories you tell in the book, I mean, you know, obviously people should just get the book so they can read this because there are, it's brilliant reporting, it's an analysis, your analysis is beyond words, and the personal story, which is fascinating, and it's not an oh woe is me. I mean, you know, one of the things about drugs that people lose track of is they're fun. I mean, that's why we do them. They're fun.
Well, no, and I mean, I think that's actually, it's a really important point because while, people think that drug addiction is this kind of inexplicable thing where you become a zombie sort of pulled by strings of something. And in fact, when people start using, they certainly do so for quite rational reasons, like they want to feel better, they want to have fun, they want to have a good time. When you get to the later stages of addiction, you certainly do end up having this feeling of, I'm doing something that I really don't want to be doing and I cannot stop. But the vast majority of people who use drugs don't ever become addicted. And it's important to realize that, like, for them, you know, it's just fun. And, you know, while obviously we want to do everything we can to reduce harm and make sure that people are not harming themselves or others while having fun, the emphasis on drugs and their negative effects often makes it very hard for people to understand what's actually going on.
It's such a complicated thing. I mean, language itself. I mean, we used to, you know, addicts and to dismiss people as addicts, and then it's like, oh, but they're people, they're just sick, they have a disease, and then it's a, no, we'll call it a disorder. It's a substance abuse disorder, and oh, no, substance use disorder, because we don't want to stigmatize people by saying that they're abusing something. So are they that dependent, psychological? You're
well, okay with the word addict, right?
Well, I am okay with the word addict. I prefer to use person with addiction because I believe that if we're going to do person with schizophrenia and person with depression, we should afford people with addiction the same respect. It is clunky, but as a writer, I'm going to accept that because I want people to have equal respect for people with addiction. The thing that I really can't stand is using dependence instead of addiction, because dependence and addiction are absolutely not the same thing. Dependence is a normal physiological response that happens within a few weeks of taking certain drugs. And these might be antidepressants, these might be high blood pressure medication, these might be medications used to treat addiction, these might be medications used to treat pain. But if they are working for their intended purpose, and you are dependent on them, and you are not cut off from your supply because of some dumb healthcare system problem, that is not an issue. We're all dependent on food and water and air. We're all dependent on each other. So dependence itself is just not a bad thing. And if you define addiction as dependence, you end up defining Prozac as causing addiction, but cocaine does not, because cocaine doesn't cause physical withdrawal symptoms where you get sick and shake. You just get irritable and annoying. It's really important to make that distinction, because if you think that addiction is dependent, you will see all pain patients who take opioids as being addicted, and you will also see people who are on methadone or Suboxone as being addicted, even though what they actually have when the drugs are appropriately titrated is simply physical dependence. Addiction is compulsive behavior despite negative consequences. Physical dependence is just needing something to function. One of them is automatically a problem, because compulsive behavior despite negative consequences means that your life isn't working very well. Dependence just means you need something, and frankly, like I said, we all need something.
And in terms of medication, I mean, as you were saying, heart medication, heck, insulin, you can be dependent on these things, because if you don't take them, you'll die.
Exactly. And so the idea, you know, we have this idea that, like, oh, physical dependence is like the reason that, you know, people don't stop taking opioids. If that were true, you could basically lock somebody in a closet for a couple of weeks and they'd be cured. And as we all know, that does not work. The problem in addiction is not the physical symptoms. You know, I mean, it is awful to experience withdrawal. It's awful physically. But it's not physically more awful than the vast majority of diseases that put people in hospitals. It's severely unpleasant, but what's really, really awful about the experience of taking heroin or other opioids is this feeling that you will never have any safety, comfort, relief, joy again in your life. That's what makes the misery and the insomnia and the anxiety around that. It's not the puking and the shaking and all that kind of thing. I mean, that's not fun, but it's not torture, whereas the mental symptoms can be torturous. So what's interesting is when the word dependence was used to be synonymous with addiction, you had this silly thing of like, well, there's physical dependence and there's psychological dependence, and psychological dependence is not as bad. But actually, cocaine causes pretty much only psychological dependence, and I don't think anybody's going to argue that crack is not addictive anymore. So it's really important to recognize that the psychological matters a lot, and that also this distinction between physical and psychological dependence is kind of artificial, since presumably we presume that the brain has some kind of physical function.
You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. My guest on this edition of Free Culture Radio is Maya Solovitz, an award-winning journalist and author of the New York Times best-selling book, Unbroken Brain, A Revolutionary New Way of Understanding Addiction. We'll have more from Maya in a moment. Her book, Unbroken Brain, was released in hardback a year ago and quickly became a New York Times bestseller. It's just been released in paperback. It's available to you as a thank you gift for your pledge of just $60. That's only $5 a month. Now just think, you can get a copy of one of the best books on drugs and drug addiction this decade while supporting your favorite public community radio station, KBOO. Just pick up the phone and call 877-500-5266 and talk to a volunteer, or go online to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. It's easy, it takes no time at all. You're supporting your favorite station, and you get a great book. Just call 877-500-5266 and make your pledge. For a minimum pledge of just $60 a year or $5 a month, you can pick up a copy of Unbroken Brain. So make that call, 877-500-5266. Now let's go back to my conversation with the journalist and author, Maya Solovitz.
By the time you get addicted, it really isn't fun anymore. And that's really important to understand, because a lot of times people think, oh, like, addicted people are just really selfish and they put their fun in front of everything else and they rob and steal and lie just so they can have fun. That's not what's going on. When you are actually addicted, you feel that the drug is necessary to your psychological survival. And you feel that it's just as necessary as, like, a mother feels about, you know, the safety of her child, or a lover feels about being able to be with his beloved. So it's really important to understand that this is generally not a thing where people are just like, oh, gee, let me have a ton of fun and, like, destroy my kid's life. Like, that's not what's going on here. When somebody's addicted, they are having negative consequences, and it is not fun anymore. And when someone is addicted, it's really important that negative consequences, if you don't have negative consequences, it's not an addiction. So that's why a soap opera addiction rarely actually rises to the level of addiction. Although if you are watching soap operas to the point where you are abandoning your children, then I would say that that probably qualifies as an addiction.
Well, the binge-watching TV isn't necessarily a bad thing unless you decide that, call in sick for a couple days in a row so that you can catch up on Game of Thrones. That's over the top.
Yes, exactly. And that's the important thing, because if you don't have negative consequences, if you just have somebody, let's say somebody's, like, obsessed with running and they're, you know, centering their lives around it, but it's making them healthier, and they're not, abandoning their family, although maybe their family would prefer they spend a little bit less time on it. So it's important to realize that addiction has to get in the way of your primary goals in life for it to be addiction, because otherwise it's just a passion.
Right on. Yeah, that's an interesting analogy. I've never actually understood running. I mean, my knees and my ankles probably wouldn't take it. And I understand it probably extends your life, but it extends your life by about the amount of time you spend running. I mean, that's...
Actually, no. Apparently, 1 hour running extends your life by 7 hours. I'm sad. Well, or if you are thinking of taking up running, that might be a good motivator there. But, yeah, it's interesting about exercise, because I feel like exercise is almost the opposite of drugs. Like, you get the hard part first and then the high, whereas drugs, you get the high and then the crash. And so it's really hard to motivate yourself to do something that, you know, the hard part comes before the fun. But I have learned over the years to make myself exercise, that if I do it, I actually will feel better. And interestingly, there's a lot of data now showing that for people with addiction, exercise can be really, really important. In fact, some people just sort of physiologically get depressed if they don't exercise.
I wasn't joking about the knees. That's why I bike. I do understand if we're talking, if you say bicycling rather than running. Oh, okay. That makes perfect sense.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. No, exactly. And I mean, right. The, running can certainly be a murder on the knees, but yeah, I always feel like it's a really interesting thing because a lot of times too with exercise, people just think of it as like, oh, it's this like righteous thing that you have to like make yourself get through. If we thought about it more as actually this is kind of fun and you can get a high from it, we might get more people exercising.
Well, exercise, putting the hard part before you get to the fun part, that's kind of a good description of the way I do interviews, because we've been really serious for quite a bit, and now I'd like to switch gears for a moment because there's a story you tell at the beginning. How did you first do cocaine, Maya?
Okay, so this is a kind of funny story. So I had this boyfriend who was involved with selling drugs to the Grateful Dead, and I was a huge, massive Deadhead. I was about 17, and we ended up bringing some coke to Jerry. So at this point, the only prior time to that I did cocaine was like an hour earlier with the lighting director. And so that was really like, it didn't sort of make much of an impression. But suddenly here I am, I'm like sitting on Jerry Garcia's bed, and he's offering me a line, and oh yeah, I'm going to say yes to that. And that just suddenly I felt as though I was sort of in on the secret of the universe, and I'm sitting there with Jerry and we're talking about the history of the name Maya and how it means illusion in Buddhism and whether the real world is an illusion or not. And it's just like the kind of tricky conversation that you would love to have with Jerry Garcia. And I just, you know, I was certainly on top of the world, and that's a very hard first experience to beat.
That's, that's...
It's funny. What's also, like, sad about it retrospectively is, like, you know, a guy his age should not be sitting around doing cocaine with 17-year-old girls, but whatever. And I have to say also that, like, nothing other than that happened, sadly for me.
Well, you were young. And of course, we don't do that kind of thing anymore. It's important to add for the benefit of the listeners and any law enforcement.
Well, exactly. And I mean, the reality is that, like, if I had a 17-year-old, I would be utterly horrified by the whole scenario.
The experience you had that first one wasn't just about the drug, obviously, because there you are, it's Jerry Garcia, for heaven's sake, and it's, you know, you're having this great conversation, you know, in private. It's not some, you know, it's not in some weird club or at the backstage. It's, you know, it's the drug, it's the mindset, it's the setting. The brilliant Norman Zinberg, he wasn't the first, of course, but his book years ago, Drug Set and Setting. Talk to the listeners about this.
Absolutely. So it was actually Timothy Leary who came up with the concept of set and setting, much as I don't like to credit him. But he did, and then Zinberg picked it up and wrote his brilliant analysis. And so the idea here is that you can't really talk about what effects a drug has independent of what setting the person is taking it in. So a setting is like your cultural beliefs about the drug, your physical environment, your whole, everything around you, the social environment, people around you, and the set is really sort of your internal stuff. So what your own thoughts are about it and what, you know, how you are feeling, like if you're starting out in a bad mood or not, that kind of thing. So if, and all drugs, you know, people just used to think that only psychedelics were affected by set and setting, but even like alcohol is affected by set and setting. So for example, if you drink a different kind of drink than you usually drink in a different setting than you usually are in, you can actually get more drunk. Also, this applies to opioids, which means that if you shoot up in a new setting, especially if you're in some kind of different mind space, like maybe really stressed or something like that, you might actually overdose on a dose that you usually tolerate. And this has actually been demonstrated in mice where actually 50% of them put in a new cage given the same dose that they were tolerant to actually died. So it's really important to know about this in terms of opioid harm reduction because most people typically shoot up in the same several places, so this doesn't often apply. But sometimes it can.
Well, that's it for this edition of Free Culture Radio. I want to thank my guest, Maya Solovitz, many thanks to our engineer, and especially thanks to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/KBOO Free Culture Radio. Please give it a like. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.